Our sponsor this week is Otlight. Otlight is the originator of natural daylight technology and has been around since 1989. Casey, you are familiar with Otlight.
I am.
And I think most crafters are, because their lights are so awesome. The light actually mimics daylight, which allows you to see better and feel better over regular lights. But you've been using yours for a while, right?
Yeah, they were on sale this summer, so I got one because my lamp had broken. And I found that my eyes don't feel so tired when I'm sitting there for a long time knitting.
Right. And I've been using mine, and I've been knitting with a dark colored yarn.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really easy to see the stitches when you have an excellent light on your work. And people, it's not just knitters, like crafters of all kinds, like quilters and
any kind.
What other kind of crafts are there?
Are there other crafts?
Nope, there's just knitting. Anyway, Otlight is sponsoring this episode, and Casey and I each have an Otlight. We've been using it. It's excellent. If you feel any eye strain, it's a great idea to give one of these lights a try. We are using Otlights from the Wellness series, and we will post a picture of the lights that, or at least the light that I'm using, we'll get a picture of that up there. If you want to learn more about Otlights, visit the show notes. We will have a link to the Otlight website, or you can go to otlight.com. That's OTTLITE.com. Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey's the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com and be sure to tell us where you're from. And this is episode 68. Mm-hmm. Yes. You're looking at me like, why'd you say 68? No, it's 68. I'm sure of it. And we're going to talk about things in this episode that have links on the internet. And if you want to see those, just go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab at the top of the page, and we'll have all the links in there. And in addition to magically turning knitting questions into knitting answers, Casey, you have an interview this time, right?
I do.
And it's, okay, let me just tell you. All I know is that my notes say electric yarn.
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
This is like one of my most favorite interviews. This is so fascinating to me. A friend of mine, actually a friend of my husband's, forwarded him an article about this yarn that some researchers at the University of Dallas had created that doesn't just conduct electricity, it generates electricity.
Okay, a yarn that generates electricity. While you're manipulating it? Like,
yeah, when it
with
moves.
It? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And so they had actually sewn it into some clothing, and they think that, I mean, this is all still in the research lab, and there's a lot more to go before we ever see it in anything, but they've sewn it into clothing, and they think that it could be something that, like if you were on a heart monitor, you could just put a shirt on instead of having all these things stuck to you.
Oh my gosh.
Fascinating. And what's most fascinating to me is the way it's created. And she said, and you'll just have to listen to the interview.
Okay, let's do it.
Hi, everybody. My name's Na Lee. I'm from UT Dallas. I'm a research scientist in the Nanotech Institute.
So I'll just explain. I came across, a friend actually sent it to me, an article about the research that you all are doing. And it talks about yarn that you've created that actually creates or doesn't conduct electricity, but explain it to me a little bit better.
Yeah, sure. Actually, the yarns we created, simply put, if you dip it into a ionic bath, which can be as simple as dissolving a table salt into a water solution. Then if you stretch it, you can generate electricity. The yarn itself, yeah, actually also conducts electricity.
Mm-hmm. What is the yarn made out of?
That's a very good question. Basically, the yarn is made of a special material we developed in the lab. We call carbon nanotubes. Maybe it sounds a little bit far. Basically, carbon nanotubes are hollow cylinders, like a store almost, but in a nanoscale. Each individual nanotubes is about 10,000 times smaller in diameter than our human hair.
Wow.
So they're really, really tiny. So basically, we can spin those carbon nanotubes, millions of them, just like the way we spin wool and spin cotton directly into a yarn. And that yarn is what we use to generate electricity.
Wow. So you take the nanotubes and then you mix it with another fiber?
Actually,
or spin it?
The yarn is made 100% of carbon nanotube only.
Oh, okay.
So that's the interesting part, because usually when people are talking about carbon nanotubes, they're this fancy exotic nanomaterials that's very easy, very hard to process. But in our lab, we have a way to grow them into a form like a bamboo forest. So
wow.
Basically, billions of the nanotubes stand vertically on top of a silicon wafer. That's the same thing that you use to make computer chips with. But then if you start drawing one out of the forest, all the neighboring ones will fall down and grab onto each other and just get continuously pulled out, just like you're pulling the wool from when you're drafting to make a hand spin yarn.
Uh-huh.
And we can directly spin that into a fiber.
Wow, that's amazing. So in the press release, it mentioned that there's a concept that you all tested, or that it's a possibility it could be sewn into a fabric and then worn to maybe run the electricity on like a heart monitor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell
right.
me a little bit more about some of the ways that you see it being used.
Okay. So the example that you just talked about, mentioned about, I can give a little bit more detail. So basically we have, because all the harvester now is a yarn form, so you can easily incorporate them into a fabric, as you were saying. So the first very obvious thing we did, you just sew it into a shirt. And this yarn, every time when you breathe, because the chest expands, so it stretches the yarn, and that creates electric signal. So basically you can use that to monitor your breath, and it does not require any battery to power it. So you don't have to worry about, I need to change my battery for all my sensors and incorporate into my shirt. So basically there are a lot of, now there's a lot of interest in smart textiles. People are using conventional sensors based on computer chips. Same thing again. That it's very fragile. It's like a glass type of material. It's very easy to break. It's not flexible, so you may not feel comfortable when you're wearing such a thing. But in our case, you can use a inherently elastic yarn form of harvester as a sensor to monitor different things. Like we just mentioned about breathing, or you can measure the heart rate. Things like in the future, I would envision, have you ever heard of Internet of Things?
Mm-hmm.
So basically people use all sorts of small sensors and sensor arrays to collect data and then report, basically communicate wirelessly onto basically another terminal. In our case, can you actually make a textile that can incorporate all sorts of different sensors inside that, first of all, it's self-powered, so you don't have to worry about battery again. And second of all, actually, you can collect data and then communicate them out wirelessly. We just did a calculation basically with a very tiny amount of the yarn, which is about the weight of two houseflies.
That's, oh my gosh.
Then you can already do the wireless communication for using this type of harvesters.
Wow. That's amazing. And so the yarn itself, how thick is it? Like a sewing thread thickness, or how thick is it? Or
so actually, it's very analog to a sewing thread. Basically, you can make different type of fineness of the yarn based on how many nanotubes, basically how wide the nanotube sheets you use to spin the yarn. So we can create from about 1 micron in diameter to more than 100 micron in diameter of yarns out of those nanotubes. So and also the interesting thing is that the performance, basically how much electricity it generates, scales with the weight of the yarn. So it depends on how much energy you require. Based on if it's a small sensor or a big sensor, you can just select a different type of diameter of the yarn.
Wow.
And now if you can do that, then things like in a very, very small area where other type of generator, or like people always use motor in reverse to generate electricity, but it's very, very difficult to make them very small and very efficient. But in our case, we're inherently in this very small footprint. So you can use in places where other materials cannot fit in even.
Wow. This is amazing. This is like blowing my mind. So I saw one of the sponsors of the study was the Navy, the U.S. Navy. Is that right?
Yeah. We got a lot of funding. They support the research in our nanotech institute for a long time. Yeah. So they are especially interested in harvesting energy from the ocean water. Yeah, that's very obvious because there's a lot of energy in the wave that generated in the ocean. And also that because, as I mentioned before, our yarn, in order to work, it requires ionic baths. So when you think about ocean water, seawater, it's already a natural big reservoir of ionic baths.
Right.
Full of ions. So actually we did experiment. One of our colleague author, he went to South Korea in the Gyeongbo Sea. So he put a yarn that's about the weight of a mosquito and attached it onto a balloon on the top and a sinker in the bottom. So every time when the wave comes, the balloon would raise up and that stretches the yarn and he can measure the electricity that's generated by the wave through that tiny yarn.
Wow, that's just amazing. So this is maybe a super basic question for you. So if you're wearing a fabric that is generating the electricity to run something like your heart monitor or whatever, do you have to, how does the electricity come from the yarn into the monitor?
I see. Okay, so we can talk about fundamentally how the yarn work first. I just mentioned that those yarns are made of millions of tiny nanotube fibers. And those nanotubes, they have a very high surface to volume ratio. Basically, what that means is that they have a lot of room for hosting ions. And when we dip the yarns into a table salt bath, for example, just into seawater, the ions automatically want to occupy all those empty spaces in the yarn. And then when you stretch them, now, just like when you are stretching a normal fiber, if you have a yarn in your hand right now, if you stretch it or twist it, you can notice that the fiber diameter actually decreases. So the yarn gets denser. And that densification actually pushes the nanotube together. And the ions now don't have as much room as before. So they are forced to fit into a much smaller area, which means the ions are so close to each other. It brings up the voltage, and that's where we generate the electricity from. So you were saying if it's in a real shirt, how does it work to power other electronics? Well, first of all, the yarn itself can function as a sensor. So you can read directly the output from the yarn. Or if you want to power some other things, then you can use the yarn connecting with a supercapacitor or charging a battery. So every time you stretch, it puts a little bit more current into the device you want to charge, basically either the supercapacitor or the battery. Then the energy stored in the end can be used to power other electronics.
Wow, that is so interesting.
It's just convenient. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe someday when we're knitting, we can be knitting with this yarn that will power our computers for us while we're knitting.
That would be really good. actually, I just did a calculation. If you want to one day, for example, to power your phone, charge your phone, or power your laptop using those yarn made into textiles, it actually requires a fair bit amount of the yarn. You will need to basically make the entire shirt out of your out of this type of harvester yarn. Yeah. So basically, that's why I was thinking maybe it's not so ideal to use them as a main power source for big consumer devices like laptops or cell phones. But powering small sensors that you don't have to maintain them, basically you don't have to worry about changing batteries all the time. And they do not need a lot of energy to power. And also that they are so small and distributed around a huge area, then it can be a very time-consuming thing to do otherwise. So using the yarn technology, this will really save a lot of basically human power and energy and batteries, so you don't have to worry about.
Yeah. I just was, when I was thinking, when I read the article about the Navy sponsoring, I can see how, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's an application for it when you're out in the forest or you're somewhere out mm-hmm. where there's not a lot of space where you can just plug something in.
Yeah.
But
so, right. Like the motivation in the very, very beginning, I think people talked a long time about, can you have a smart band that you mm-hmm. can attach to a backpack? So
right.
when a hiker is walking with his gears in the backpack, because there's vibration, the damping, basically the backpack will bouncing up and down in your back, that type of energy is wasted. Can you actually create something that can harness this type of mechanical damping, basically mechanical energy our human body generates, and then convert that into electricity? And I think that's a lot of people's dream, and now we are just starting this new technology, very young type of technology, and we can actually see if we can further develop it, or for example, to lower the price more, to mass produce it, and to find other materials that can be even replacing the carbon nanotubes, because the carbon nanotubes now are still currently very expensive. That's why I didn't suggest to use them to knit the entire shirt.
Sure.
Yeah, so, and then in the future, yeah, I think there will be a bright future if that's possible.
Well, that is so fascinating and amazing, and
thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. You really helped kind of bring it into layman's terms for somebody who's not a nanoscientist. Well, thanks so much for your time.
For you too. Thank you.
Casey, wow.
I know.
I don't even know what to say. This is a game changer.
I know. It's amazing. I mean, I don't know that we're ever going to do anything with it. Like she said, I asked her if we could, when we were exchanging emails, I was like, could we someday knit and power our phone while
we
knit?
That's exactly the kind of thing I'm thinking. It's like, what else can you, what did
she
say?
She says that it's too, like the, it would take too much energy to power, like the amount of yarn that you would have to use. So then I'm thinking, okay, I'd knit a whole sweater.
But, yeah, to power your phone for
to power my phone. But, you know, to be able to do some small things, and there's definitely still a lot of work for them to do, but this is pretty fascinating.
That is really fascinating.
Yeah.
That was a great interview.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go ahead and get into the knitting questions.
Okay. Hi, Stacy and Casey. I once read somewhere that you can freeze garments rather than washing them. The bacteria that causes clothes to smell after wearing is destroyed in the freezer, and they're supposed to come out smelling of, well, nothing. My question is, would this work for woolen socks and sweaters? Blocking sweaters after every wear is not an idea I like. Living in the north of England, it's cold most of the time, so our sweaters, we call them jumpers. We know we got into that. Get a lot of use. I've also heard freezing wools kills moth larvae. Europe is pretty...
You know, I've always thought...
What?
Larvae is a pretty girl's name.
That's like a dystopian novel girl's name.
If you didn't have any association with the word at all,
you
just heard larvae.
It makes me think of like the Hunger Games, like Katniss.
Okay, I'm sorry. Keep reading.
Europe is predicted, when you write your novel.
When I write my novel, we keep talking about the novel I'm going to write.
Europe is predicted to have a plague of moths this year, so it might be worth knowing about. Love your podcast. You mentioned teaching blind people in the past. This must be why your verbal instructions are always so clear and
precise. That's really nice.
Neil from near Manchester, UK.
Okay. Neil wants to know if you can freeze a garment to rather than washing it. I'm going to say no. I don't think you're going to get as much out of freezing it as you do getting it wet and washing it, following the washing instructions on the yarn label. Now, let me say, because he actually asks about socks here, and I wear wool socks, you know, every time I walk the dogs in the wintertime. You know, it's not as cold here in Texas as it is other places, but really wool socks are so comfortable, like in my running shoes when I'm walking the dogs. But just like in the summertime, wintertime, whatever time of year, I don't want to be too gross, but feet are gross, right?
Yes.
You have a special problem with feet.
I really don't like feet. I'm like an anti-fetish.
I don't have a problem. No, I kind of do have a problem with feet, but just you wear socks and washing them cannot be this thing done without. You have to actually put them in water and jiggle them around a little bit, because no, I don't want to be gross. That's what you have to do. Like,
well, and it shapes, like the wool kind of gets reshapen and
that's
stuff.
That's the other thing is like, let's just talk about socks. And I know Neil is asking about sweaters as well, but
or jumpers.
When we're talking about socks, getting it in the water and, you know, with some soap and using a superwash wool and putting it in the washing machine. And then I always set mine out flat to dry. That's just how I treat my socks. But it does really like give new life to those fibers. And they, like a sock that might have been stretched out a little after, you know, 10 hours of wear, suddenly bounces back into shape and is all ready to go again. And then when I'm thinking about sweaters, you know, before I put something in the freezer, I think I'd put a wool sweater dry in the dryer. Mm-hmm. That seems like a better way to clean it. But if there's any BO or a spaghetti stain on the front, I'm thinking you gotta wash it with water.
But we talked about this before. You don't have to wash it every time you wear it.
No,
and
that's
please
good.
Don't.
Yeah, you don't. Well, socks.
Socks.
No, you don't even have to wash those every time. Yeah. Unless your feet are really gross.
Don't make me think about gross feet.
Feet.
You know, my mom's going to laugh because she listens. It's my brother's fault because he had really stinky feet when he was younger.
Okay. Hello, Casey's mom. I'm sure she's laughing right now.
She'll verify he did.
I'm sure. Because now you're completely grossed out even by your own kids' feet. But what I'm thinking, the thing, you brought it up. If you have a sweater and you are not spilling spaghetti sauce on it and you're wearing a t-shirt under it when you wear it so that you're not getting, you know, it's not in direct contact with your skin, you don't have to wash that a lot. You know, here in Texas, I wash sweaters like that just once at the end of the season, unless I've spilled something on it and then I have to wash it, you know, another time. But they're, you know, wool breathes so well and stuff. You don't have to wash it every time you wear it, and it's better off if you just don't.
And actually, you gave me those little wipes.
Oh yeah, tell me, what are they exactly? They're
Eucalan wool wash has these little wipes, kind of like when you get a little towelette to wash your hands or whatever at a restaurant. And they were basically like a little bit of that in a little towelette so you could travel with it. And I spilled something on my sweater and I just wiped it off.
Kinda and it, like worked, those, it worked to get it off and you didn't have to wash the whole thing? We should link to that. Maybe I shouldn't have given you those. Maybe I should have hung on to those for myself.
I can bring some back. It's like those Tide to Go wipes, if you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. But it's wool wash, and especially for your knits. What if you wash your hands with them?
I didn't try that, but it was really soapy. Like, I felt like I should save it because there was plenty of stuff in there for the next time I spill.
Okay. That's really smart. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Hi, Stacy and Casey. Thanks so much for your wonderful podcast. I have just one complaint. It's too short.
Oh, no.
We know. I just listened to episode 15. That's going way back. And was interested in the section about left-handed knitters being predominantly continental knitters. I'm left-handed and I knit right-handed. I'm a thrower of sorts. My left-handed grandmother taught me when I was very young. I'm trying to teach myself continental style, but it's so hard. I know that knitting a gauge swatch is important, even if I've never done one. But it's important to do one for something. Is it important to do one for something as small as a pair of socks? It would almost take me longer to do the swatch than to knit some of the socks. Thanks for the wonderful podcast. Keep it up. Tracy from New Zealand.
Hi, Tracy. That's a really good question. Tracy's wondering, do you need to knit a swatch for something that's little? And I always say, no, just start knitting the thing, because you're going to put more effort into a 4x4 swatch than you would if you just started knitting the thing. You know, that's why I always just cast on for hats and I see how it goes. And I always decide, well, if my gauge is off in this, the hat's going to fit somebody. You know, somebody in my family is getting a new hat, whether it's, you know, one of my relatives with a big head or one of my relatives with a little head. Just depends on the size the hat comes out. But really for socks, because socks are so stretchy and there's some negative ease to them, you can start knitting them. And there's the reason I say they're stretchy and make a point of that is because there's a little bit of leeway in the gauge for that. And a little bit, it doesn't have to be spot on like you want a sweater to fit or something. So, I always just start knitting the socks. And then I like to knit toe-up socks. I finish knitting the toe and I measure gauge and I see how I'm doing. And if I'm pretty close, I run with it. If for some reason my tension and the designer's tension is really off. Like they're saying that I should be getting 9 stitches per inch and I'm getting 5, like a major difference, then I would rip that out and start over again with a way different size needles. But usually, I mean, do you find that you need to change needle size or patterns?
Oh, on socks. No, I pretty much have only really knit your sock patterns.
You and I have the same tension when it comes to sock patterns.
I think, yeah, I've pretty much just stick with the ones you recommend.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think that for most of your patterns, but...
That's actually really handy. I'm not saying there's anything good about matching my tension, right. Although it's perfect.
That's good to know.
No, I'm kidding.
Although the sling heel socks, I feel like are coming out a little baggier, but they're DK.
The DK weight, yeah. So they're going to feel a little
fine,
different.
Because they're going to be kind of around the house socks anyway.
But when you do know that your tension is identical to a designer that you often knit, it's so handy because... A lot of times you don't have to swatch. You just know, hey, every time so-and-so uses size 7, it's size 7 for me too, because our tensions are even.
Yeah.
And there's no, just to reiterate, there is no right or wrong with tension. Your tension is yours, and you're special. Whichever it is. If it's tight or loose, there's no right or wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your tension is your tension.
I want to make that clear because I was joking saying my tension was perfect, which it is. No. Okay, Casey, I think that's all we have for this week.
It is.
Okay. If people want to find you online...
My website is kcknits.com, the letter K and the letter C. And I'll definitely share with you the article about the electric yarn.
Did you take any photos?
We just talked over the phone. They're in University of Dallas.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
But there was a photo in the article.
Okay. And if you want, I'll put a link to that article or that blog post that Casey puts together. I'll put that in the show notes. And if you want to find me online, there is, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. And you can go to my website, verypink.com. If you scroll down, all of my other social media buttons are there. And I'm about to start coughing, so I'm going to sign this off right now. That is all we have for this episode. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.